Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from the Free Grace Broadcaster. That's a quarterly put out by the people at Mount Zion Bible Church in Pensacola, Florida. The topic this quarter is our adversary, the devil, and to speak on it, we read the words of Charles Spurgeon, the influential English Baptist preacher born at Kelvedon, Essex, England, in the UK. He lived from 1834 to 1892. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" His text, Job 1:8. What is it that Satan considers with a view to the injury of God's people? It cannot be said of him, as of God, that he knoweth us altogether. But since he has now been nearly 6,000 years dealing with poor, fallen humanity, he must have acquired a very vast experience in that time. And having been all over the earth, and having tempted the highest and the lowest, he must know exceedingly well what the springs of human action are and how to play upon them. Satan watches and considers first our peculiar infirmities. He looks us up and down, as I have seen a horse dealer do with a horse, and soon finds out wherein we are faulty. I, a common observer, might think the horse an exceedingly good one, as I see it running up and down the road. But the dealer sees what I cannot see. He knows how to handle the creature just in such quarters and at such points that he soon discovers any hidden mischief. Satan knows how to look at us and reckon us up from heel to head, so that he will say of this man his infirmity is lust, or of that other he hath a quick temper, or of this other he is proud, or the other he is slothful. The eye of malice is very quick to perceive a weakness, and the hand of enmity soon takes advantage of it. When the arch spy finds a weak place in the wall of our castle, he takes care to plant his battering ram and begin his siege. You may conceal, even from your dearest friend, your infirmity, but you will not conceal it from your worst enemy. He goes about with a match, and though you may think you have covered all the gunpowder of your heart, yet he knows how to find a crack to put his match through. Much mischief will he do, unless eternal mercy shall prevent. He also takes care to consider our frames and states of mind. If the devil would attack us when our mind is in certain moods, we should be more than a match for him. He knows this and shuns the encounter. Some men are more ready for temptation when they are distressed and desponding. The fiend will then assail them. Others will be more liable to take fire when they are jubilant and full of joy. Then he will strike his spark into the tinder. Certain persons, when they are much vexed and tossed back and forth, can be made to say almost anything. And others, when their souls are like perfectly placid waters, are just then in a condition to be navigated by the devil's vessel. As the worker in metals knows that one metal is to be worked at such a heat and another at a different temperature, so Satan knows exactly the temperature at which to work us to his purpose. Small pots boil directly as they are put on the fire, and so little men of quick temper are soon in a passion. Larger vessels require more time and coal before they boil, but when they do boil, it is a boil indeed, not soon forgotten. The enemy, like a fisherman, watches his fish, adapts his bait to his prey, and knows in what seasons and times the fish are most likely to bite. This hunter of souls comes upon us unawares, and often we are overtaken in a fault or caught in a trap through an unwatchful frame of mind. That rare collector of choice sayings, Thomas Spencer, even though he attributed this quote to Thomas Spencer, the original author was John Spencer. John Spencer. So anyway, Charles Spurgeon can make a mistake now and then, right? But he was a collector of choice sayings, this John Spencer. He says, "The chameleon, when he lies on the grass to catch flies and grasshoppers, taketh upon him the color of the grass, as the polypus or octopus doth the color of the rock under which he lurketh, that the fish may boldly come near him without any suspicion of danger. In like manner, Satan turneth himself into that shape that we least fear, and sets before us such objects of temptation as we are most agreeable to in our natures, that so he may the sooner draw us into his net. He sails with every wind and blows us that way which we incline ourselves through the weakness of nature. Is our conscience tender? Well, he tempts us to too much preciseness. Hath our conscience some latitude? He tempts us to carnal liberty. Are we bold-spirited? He tempts us to presumption. Are we timorous and distrustful? He tempts us to desperation. Are we of a flexible disposition? He tempts us to inconstancy. Are we stiff? He labors to make obstinate heretics, schismatics, or rebels of us. Are we of an austere temper? He tempts us to cruelty. Are we soft and mild? He tempts us to indulgence and foolish pity. Are we hot in matters of religion? He tempts us to blind zeal and superstition. Are we cold? He tempts us to Laodicean lukewarmness. Thus does he lay his traps, that one way or other he may ensnare us. That was all from John Spencer. He also takes care to consider our position among men. There are a few persons who are most easily tempted when they are alone. They are the subjects then of great heaviness of mind, and they may be driven to most awful crimes. Perhaps most of us are more liable to sin when we are in company. In some company, I never should be led into sin. Into another society, I could scarcely venture. Many are so full of levity that those of us who are inclined the same way can scarcely look them in the face without feeling our besetting sin set a-going. And others are so somber that if they meet a brother of like mold, they're pretty sure between them to invent an evil report of the goodly land. Satan knows where to overtake you in a place where you lie open to his attacks. He will pounce upon you, swoop like a bird of prey from the sky where he has been watching for the time to make his descent with a prospect of success. How, too, will he consider our condition in the world? He looks at one man and he says, that man has property. No use trying such and such arts with him. But here's another man who's very poor. I'll catch him in that net. Then again he looks at the poor man and he says, now I can't tempt him to this folly, but I will lead the rich man into it. As the sportsman has a gun for wild fowl and another for deer and game, so has Satan a different temptation for various orders of men. I do not suppose that the queen's temptation will ever annoy Mary, the kitchen maid. I do not suppose, on the other hand, that Mary's temptation will ever be very serious to me. You could probably escape from mine. I do not think you could, and I sometimes fancy I could bear yours, though I question if I could. Satan knows, however, just where to smite us, and our position, our capabilities, our education, our standing in society, our calling may all be doors through which he may attack us. You who have no calling at all are in peculiar peril. I wonder what the devil does not swallow you over outright. The most likely man to go to hell is the man who has nothing to do on earth. I say that seriously. I believe that there cannot happen a much worse evil to a person than to be placed where he has no work. And if I should ever be in such a state, I would get employment at once, for fear I would be carried off body and soul by the evil one. Idle people tempt the devil to tempt them. Nor am I done yet. Satan, when he makes his investigations, notices all the objects of our affection. I doubt not when he went around Job's house, he observed it as carefully as thieves do a jeweler's premises when they mean to break into them. They very cunningly take account of every door, window, and fastening. They fail not to look at the next door house, for they may have to reach the treasure through the building that adjoins it. And so when the devil went round, jotting down in his mind all of Job's position, he thought to himself, there are the camels and the oxen, the asses, the servants. Yes, yes, I can use all these very admirably. And then he thought, oh, there are the three daughters and 10 sons, and they go feasting. I shall know where to catch them. And if I can just blow the house down when they are feasting, that will afflict the father's mind the more severely, for he will say, oh, that they had died when they had been praying rather than when they had been feasting and drinking wine. I will put down two in the inventory, says the devil, his wife. I dare say I shall need her. And accordingly it came to that. Nobody could have done what Job's wife did. None of the servants could have said that sad sentence so stingingly, curse God and die. Ah, Satan, thou hast plowed with Job's heifer, but thou hast not succeeded. Job's strength lies in his God, not in his hair, or else thou might have had him shorn as Samson was shorn. And perhaps the evil one had even inspected Job's personal sensibilities and so selected that form of bodily affliction that he knew to be most dreaded by his victim. He brought upon him a disease that Job may have seen and shuddered at, poor men outside the city gates. Brethren, Satan knows quite as much regarding you. You have a child, and Satan knows that you idolize it. Ah, says he, there's a place for my wounding him. Even the partner of your bosom may be made a quiver in which hell's arrows shall be stored until the time may come, and then she may prove the bow from which Satan will shoot them. Watch even your neighbor and her that lieth in your bosom, for you know not how Satan may get an advantage over you. Our habits, our joys, our sorrows, our retirements, our public positions, all may be made weapons of attack by this desperate foe of the Lord's people. We have snares everywhere, in our bed, at our table, in our house, in the street. There are gins and trapfalls in company. There are pits when we are alone. We may find temptations in the house of God as well as in the world, traps in our high estate and deadly poisons in our humiliation. We must not expect to be rid of temptations until we have crossed the Jordan, and then, thank God, we are beyond gunshot of the enemy. The last howling of the dog of hell will be heard as we descend into the chill waters of the black stream. But when we hear the hallelujah of the glorified, we shall be done with the black prince forever and ever. That was from a sermon delivered on Sunday morning, April 9, 1865, at the Metropolitan Tabernacle in Newington. Well, after hearing that, you may want to receive this quarterly yourself every 3 months, to have it sent to you at your home, free of charge, totally. Just send an email to chapel@mountzion.org. Ask for their catalog, too. They have a lot of other free things and things that aren't free, but you need to find out about these folks. chapel@mountzion.org. Thank you for listening. Remember that I like hearing from you. Do contact me with questions and comments at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com. Look around the site. I do believe you're going to find other things that will be beneficial. Readings from great preachers, stories from the persecuted church, Bible studies, and a lot more. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we will talk again real soon. Bye-bye.